even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Chris Smith, Mark Gibson, Reed Fischler, and our brand new bosses, Errol, Ian, Kelly, and Thomas Love. They all just started backing us on Patreon. Welcome to you all. Coming up on DTNS, we unpack iOS versus Android and what really makes people switch. Might Amazon pay your cell phone bill in the future? And Ron Richards tells us why pinball machines are the new hot nuts. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, June 2nd, 2023. From a studio that has yet to be named, I'm Sarah Lane.
From lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Rich Straffolino.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us is Ron Richards, CEO and co-founder of Scorbit, also host of All About Android, and former colleague of many of us. Hi, Ron.
Yes, hello. Hey, good to be back after my eight-year hiatus from DTNS. I'm glad to be back.
Has it been 8 years?
We did. Rich looked in the schedule. It was back in 2015. That was last time I was on the show. So,
Yeah.
Good to be reunited.
Well, lovely to have you. We're going to talk about pinball. We're going to talk about Android. We're going to talk about all the things. But first, we shall start with the quick hits. Yet more shakeups at Twitter this week. The company's head of trust and safety, Ella Irwin, announced that she resigned from the company. She joined Twitter back in June of 2022, succeeding Yoel Roth in November of last year. No word on who is going to replace her in that role, but that is not all. The Wall Street Journal sources say AJ Brown, Twitter's head of brand safety and ad quality, has also departed.
Bloomberg's Mark Gurman reports Apple is in discussions to open, relocate, or remodel up to 53 Apple stores over the next 4 years. About 40% of those are planned for the Asia-Pacific region. Apple currently operates over 520 retail stores across 26 countries, so give you some sense of how big of a expansion and remodeling this will be. WWDC starts on Monday, just a reminder, so we may hear more about that in what is sure to be a jammed-packed event.
Progress Software disclosed that it discovered a vulnerability in its MoveIt transfer software, which manages file transfer software and could also allow for unauthorized access of the file environment. Several security firms, including Mandiant, said they saw evidence of data exfiltration from multiple victims. It appears that malicious actors started scanning for the utility on March 3rd, and patches are now available.
Microsoft updated the free version of Teams. This is the one that's included with Windows 11 specifically to support its communities feature. So this does things like let users create and manage focused groups. This was originally only available on mobile, although Microsoft now says they plan to bring it to Windows 10, macOS, and the web. Not too surprising to see that expansion, but now that we have confirmation, the version of Teams also added Microsoft Designer integration, and this lets users create media assets, mainly pictures and stuff, from text prompts.
Raspberry Pis have been in short supply for a while. Pardon me. And now it looks like there might be some relief on the way. Perhaps. Raspberry Pi CEO Eben Upton said that the company expects to ramp production up of its products to 1 million per month in July, the goal being to maintain production until it clears the consumer backlog. This would be a significant output increase as the company shipped 800,000 units in all of Q1, quite a bit lower than what it would like to do, which Upton called the worst quarter since 2015. The company is working with Sony on this effort, and Sony began stockpiling non-silicon elements needed in Pi production. All right, Rich, let's talk a little bit more about how Amazon wants to make Prime more Prime.
Yeah, it's some prime real estate for Amazon, surely. Yeah, so, I mean, Amazon Prime, people might forget that at one point it just offered free two-day shipping, but, you know, over the years it's expanded to a lot of other services. I'm not going to lie, I had to look it up just to make sure I would even get, like, a representative sample of this. Things like, you got Twitch Prime on there, you got music, you got video streaming, you got ebooks, you got podcasts, even a Yuri Grubhub. There's so many stuff, it's surprising every time you look there. It's a lot. It's also pretty successful, with consumer intelligence partners or research partners estimating there are 167 million Prime subscribers in the U.S. as of March. A lot of people, but the research also found this was basically flat growth on the year. The number hadn't really moved all that much.
Yeah, so you might be wondering, okay, how else would Amazon possibly sweeten the Prime deal if you're already a Prime member? Well, cheap mobile phone service seems to be on the market, maybe. Bloomberg sources say that Amazon is in talks with Verizon, T-Mobile, and Dish about offering discounted cell service at around $10 per month. It sounds like a great deal. Or possibly even free if you're a Prime subscriber. Any deal or service is reportedly months away. This is not happening tomorrow. But does Prime Mobile give Amazon a good lock-in feature? Ron, are you a Prime member? And if not, would this make you sign up?
I am a Prime member. I'm an OG Prime member. In fact, Sarah, I think I remember when Prime came out. I think we were all at Revision 3, and I remember like everyone signing up for. I vaguely remember that. I could be wrong, but I remember when Prime. I was an original get free shipping. That's a great deal, 100 whatever bucks a month, and have never looked back. I do use Amazon Prime Video to watch stuff like everybody else does. I recommend. I recommend The Outlaws. It's a British show on Amazon. But I don't use anything else. I don't use the music. I don't use the cloud storage. I don't use the photo storage. I don't use anything else.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. And I've had
Shipping I do, but
I have a friend who swears by the music service, loves it, says it's great, and the cloud photo, and it's like, you're a fool for being on Google Photos, but I'm like, yeah, no, I have no desire to use it. So I have no desire to have Amazon linked to my cell phone coverage, even at $10 a month, personally.
I mean, that price, I don't know how they do it, right? Because they would be partnering with – they would be – Prime Mobile from Dish or T-Mobile or something like that, or they would just be their own MVMO. And the idea that right now, like, it seems like the market rate that all of these, you know, virtual network operators are able to hit is about $25 a month. Like, that's what Visible is at. That's what Mint has been at for a while there. That seems to be like the base level of like unlimited, you know, mobile and stuff like that. 25 is how they're able to make that feasible. So for Amazon to offer $10, either they're just not paying the carriers enough, which is not going to happen, or they're eating that cost, which would be more than the cost of Prime is right now, right? If we just take $15 over 12 months, it's like $180, right? Don't do my math. Just let me know I'm wrong. But like, so I don't know how they make that math work other than just making it a huge loss leader and being like, listen, once we got your phone number, it's enough of a pain in the butt to change your number.
I think that's gonna
make some stickiness there. Yeah,
exactly. I think exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, Amazon is the company that gave you the subsidized tablet with ads on the load screen. Like, they were one of the first people in the domestic market to do that. Right. So like, clearly they have no problem with doing that as a loss leader to get the customers. They just want acquisition. Cause once you get in on that ecosystem, it is hard to get off the train. Like, I actually have scheduled subscribe things. Every 6 weeks, Amazon sends me more paper towels and more iced tea.
And so,
yeah. It's amazing. It's, yeah.
I live my life that way.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised they do this, but they wouldn't get my dollar for it. So.
Gosh, I don't know, Ron. I feel like I'm already so entrenched. I mean, I'm a Verizon user. I don't know if somebody would like to pick up my monthly cell phone bill, which is about $89. But if they were to, and it was Amazon, and I'm already paying them for, you know, dog bags every 6 weeks, and a variety of other things, I don't know. It's kind of compelling. I think that the company is banking on that.
Well, my point of view on this, and I recognize my old man internet stoicism in it. I am still with T-Mobile from when I signed up for when I got Android when the G1 came out. I'm still with T-Mobile. I have no contract. I'm on an unlimited everything deal that I got in 2008, and I refuse to speak to anyone at T-Mobile because I'm afraid to lose that unlimitedness. So I haven't touched it. I you'd think I would sign up for Google Fi. I haven't. You think I try Mint Mobile? I haven't. I'm probably paying more than I need to, but I'm holding on to that unlimited data and all the stuff for dear life for like no reason. Like it's so I'm definitely
it's the reason that you you don't want to have a worse deal later on.
Right.
The one interesting thing about all of this is that this is basically flipping what the carriers are already doing, like the complete opposite way, right? Like when you sign up for Verizon, oh, you get free Apple TV or you get free streaming or whatever like this and stuff like that. This is Amazon saying like, no, that's not the pack-in. Everything else is the thing you're paying for. The pack-in is going to be your mobile service is a really kind of a wild place to put, based on how much of a premium all these carriers, that's their bread and butter. So that just shows you the presence that Amazon has. And if you're Dish and trying to grow subscribers on a fledgling network, Amazon, 167 million people, even if you get a fraction of that, that's a good way to grow your network.
Well, Ron Richards, being a host of All About Android for some time now, we were very excited to ask you about your thoughts on Boy Genius's newest report, where you stand on Apple's iMessage being unfriendly to Android users and Google's campaign for Apple to convert to RCS. This has been going on for a while now. Consumer Intelligence Research Partners, or SIRP, reports that between 10 and 15 of new iPhone buyers in the U.S. come from Android. Okay, so of that 10 to 15%, number one, prior phone problems. That's 53% of them saying, we just wanted a new phone. Number two, new phone features. Maybe the iPhone has a better camera. 26% said that was the case. Number three, cost. I would like to spend less on a new iPhone than a comparable Android smartphone. 15% people said that. And the last one, number four, community connecting, meaning iMessage and FaceTime on iOS is a draw. That's only 6%, according to Boy Genius report. But it's a real thing, isn't it?
It is. We actually were talking about this on All About Android recently, and actually Jason Howell was really trying to wrap his head around this whole concept because there've been a couple of reports recently about brand affinity to Android and to Google Pixel and people jumping ship going over to iPhone. Going through those examples you put out there, I would eliminate cost because I feel like it's pretty much at parity. If anything, a new iPhone is as expensive or cost comparable to the new Samsung Android phone or to the Pixel, whatever. I feel like we've got somewhat cost parity there. The only X factor is whatever discounts that the carriers provide. Like sign up for Verizon, get a free iPhone, and I don't know. I'm not following those promotions, but there could be carrier based discounts that are swaying people. The new phone features one, I mean, that is just literally, that's a tennis game, right? Like Android's got the better camera. iPhone's got the better camera. Like, iOS is pulling in features from Android. Now iOS has the dynamic island and all this sort of stuff. Like, I feel like the feature arms war, it just literally like that changes from release to release to release, which phone is better. I do think the prior phone problems is I'm not surprised to see that as such a high percentage as 50%, but I do think that the community connection and the iMessage aspect of it is more of an issue than this is reflecting because the whole green bubble shame is real. I mean, I've suffered it for years. I literally last week I had a friend complain. It's like, yeah, but every time you text me, you have a green bubble. Like it's amazing what what culture class war Apple has created, which is very ironic given Steve Jobs' view of the world and stuff like that, that they actually created a haves and have nots kind of scenario.
But I mean, it's not so, yes, it's a class war, but it's also, you know, if you're on Android and you're in a group text with a bunch of iMessage people, the group thread breaks.
Yeah.
Now, whose fault is that? It's kind of Apple's fault, right? Because Apple doesn't care.
100%.
Yeah.
Ron, my question is, though, the shaming is real. So, like, that's coming from the iPhone user going to the Android user. Or, hey, let's throw out the flip phone user there, too. We don't want to leave them out either. But, like, the idea is maybe that shame is not effective, right? Like, we might feel like, oh, we got the green, you know, oh, I did a group chat and all of a sudden it turned green. Oh, boy. You know, that like, but maybe that doesn't actually correlate to much of a change in buying behavior for Android phone use. At least that's what this study seems to show me. It's like your derision as an iPhone owner does not impact me that much as an Android.
Well, I think this is where we get into where you question the methodology of the survey, yeah. Right? Because we, you know, there was, I think it was the Wall Street Journal article a couple of months ago. It is a real thing with kids. Mm-hmm. It is a real thing with middle school and high school kids to be the kid with an Android phone that's not in the iMessage group. That like cyber, I can't believe I'm saying it, but that level of cyberbullying around the color of their thing, it is enough. I've talked to friends who are parents who've been like, yeah, no, I don't want to, but I had to get them an iPhone because they can't miss out on the thing or whatever. Like, and it's mm-hmm. and it's something that I'm personally afraid of with my kids, and because being an Android person, I want to be like, hey, use the Pixel, but because listen, I've got a box of these review units that you can use right now, but
we're also, you know, we're going through the survey where at least a few the people that were surveyed said we wanted the iPhone because it was cheaper, so it's right. not as if Android is some like, you know, bargain basement you know, mobile system at all at this point.
Well, I also wonder, it also depends on what people think of Android, right? And I'll go back to the deals. Like, I just quickly searched iPhone 14 cost, and the first link I get back is Verizon, get an iPhone 14 on us, and Apple saying get $200 to $630 off on an iPhone 14 when you trade in, right? Like, so there are lots of aggressive pricing deals that are happening on the Apple side. Whereas on the flip side, if you're just a casual consumer and you see what's going on with Android and you see Samsung touting the latest foldable or Google touting the latest foldable and it's $2,000, is there a perceived perception there? It's like, if I'm being told the latest and greatest Android phone is $1,700, I can't even afford that. I'm just going to stick with the iPhone. I'm going to switch over to the iPhone, not realizing that there's actually a very robust low, mid, and, you know, flagship tiers within Android, and you can find a really great a really great Android phone in the $300 to $400 range that is on par with a lot of the, you know, a lot of the functionality that iPhone does provide. Maybe not so much on the camera side, maybe not so much on some of the higher level processing stuff, but for the bulk of, you know, we talk about class war, for the bulk of the middle and lower class, Android is the better option from a cost standpoint, but iPhone is the one that's sought after. So
Yes, we could go on and on about this. Yeah. But since we're all travelers, we like to think of ourselves as worldly people. It is travel tech on this week's Tom's Top 5, where Tom shares his picks for personal travel tech to make your trip a little bit more enjoyable. You might go Android, you might go iOS, you might, I don't know, have a Palm Pilot. I don't care. But you can catch it at youtube.com/DailyTechNewsShow.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage,
Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
All right, well, the conventional rhythm on pinball, you know, the classic arcade game. You use those flippers, knock silver ball around a table to score points. If this is your first time hearing about pinball, you're gonna be amazed by this conversation. But if you've heard about it, you might think, it's too old-fashioned for modern tastes. It's just a thing of the past. Well, a recent article in The Economist notes the resurgence of interest in pinball, with sales of new machines rising 15 to 20% every year since 2008. And that's according to Zen Sharp from Stern Pinball, the last remaining pinball maker. So, I mean, they would know where the market's at. Ron, I'm curious, could you let us know about your startup, Scorebit, and this kind of concept of connecting pinball machines to the internet? Can you kind of maybe break down the tech that's being integrated into, you know, we think of pinball machines as old tech, but there's a lot of modern tech in these things, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'll actually start by well-actualing you, because that quote came from Zach Sharp from Stern Pinball, and the last remaining pinball maker is actually not accurate. There's actually a bunch of pinball manufacturers that are out there, and that's part of the resurgence. Mm-hmm. So just a quick kind of, you know, past 20 years history lesson, you know, pinball has been, you know, we all grew up with it. I got to imagine, you know, like I played my first pinball machine at Comdex in 1987 when my dad took me to it. I was like 10 years old and played in the game room at the hotel. Like, pinball has been a mainstay within arcades, right? And what's so much fun about pinball mm-hmm. is that there's a technology aspect to it with the lights and the bells and the ding and all this other stuff. But then there's a kinetic physics piece of it in that you know, you're hitting the flipper to the ball, the ball's moving in a trajectory, you can move the machine and change the outcome of the game, which you can't do in a video game, right? So there's a physicality to it, which makes pinball so much fun. Pinball hit rough times in the late 90s. Bally and Williams, who was the biggest manufacturer of all of them, you know, kind of gravitated more to slot machines and shut down their, and video games were rampant. They were, you know, they were the makers of Mortal Kombat. So clearly they're making millions of Mortal Kombat, and pinball was struggling, especially when an average pinball machine costs, you know, it can be very expensive. You know, these days pinball machines cost anywhere from $7,000 to $15,000 per machine, right? So it's a big investment. Yeah, it's a big investment. But and whatever the rate of inflation, that's how much it cost in the 90s. It was still thousands of dollars. So they shut down their pinball division, and pinball kind of was like on its last leg. Stern Pinball was the last manufacturer standing. They were still making machines in the 2000s, but at a very slow rate. They put out like one or two new games a year for years and years and years. But then some point around, you know, around 2010 or so, things started, you know, kind of taking an upswing. More manufacturers arrived on the scene. The second largest pinball manufacturer, a company called Jersey Jack Pinball, was innovative with their first machine in that instead of, if you played pinball, a game in the 90s, you probably remember it had like a pixel-based dot matrix screen mm-hmm. where the oh, scores. Yeah. Jersey Jack was the first manufacturer to build an OS based on Linux to run the machine and put a 26-inch monitor on the back box and have like video animation and stuff playing. And like, so that kind of moved the technology level forward a bit. And then you've seen some smaller boutique manufacturers like Spooky Pinball and Pinball Brothers. And there's a list of them out there now. Chicago Gaming Company, a whole bunch of other companies that have emerged that are releasing one, maybe two pinball machines a year. Stern has been the one that has the real market. They're like the Apple, as much as I hate to say it, in terms of market dominance. They release anywhere from 4 to 6 games a year, new games and pushing the technology forward. But pinball has very much been a, you buy the machine, you plug it in, you play it, and that's that. And so the idea of connecting it to the internet is somewhat new. Actually, so Scorebit is a company that I co-founded with Jay Adelson, who some folks might remember. He was the former CEO of Dig and co-founder of Revision 3, where Sarah and I worked together and Roger worked together, along with Brian O'Neill, who worked at Dig and then also worked at Eventbrite and Slack. I was actually living in San Francisco at the time, and I was in Molotov's in the Lower Haight, and there's two pinball machines there, and I was playing it and just having a fun time, not knowing what I was doing, and noticed that someone put up a flyer that there was a pinball league forming in the Upper Haight. And so I went to the website, and I was curious. I'm like, well, I like pinball, so I signed up. And this is must have been like 2012 or so.
So you were like a casual pinball.
Totally. Drunken pinball playing, didn't know what to do. And like the whole thing was that what was fun is that once you hit the ball and get multi-ball, you're like, oh, how do I do that again? And so like started talking to other people pinball.
And that's when I
discovered that there was a whole competitive aspect to it. And there's actually the International Flipper Pinball Association, which is like kind of like the PGA. And there are tournaments all around the world and people are ranked. At one point I was ranked like 700th in the world as far as competitive pinball players. I'm now like in the 3000s because I don't play as much anymore. But like this, so what you had was what happened in San Francisco in cities like Chicago, Seattle, New York, LA. You had these small pinball leagues cropping up and competitive pinball players getting into it. And it had a real cool, casual kind of bar vibe to it. And it was a lot of fun. And so you saw more, for whatever reason, culturally, you saw this upswing of people playing pinball. And that kind of mirrored the upswing of manufacturers emerging. But nobody was doing anything with the internet. So Jay and myself were at California Extreme, which is a arcade game show in San Jose that happens every year. And I was actually saying to Jay how it would be really cool if I had an app to keep track of my scores, because a friend of mine that I was playing with, he beat me and he got a really high score on Star Trek, on a Star Trek game. And he went, oh, cool. And he took out his phone and opened up a text file and scrolled down to Star Trek and deleted his old score and typed his new score. And I just went, oh, God damn it. There's a better way to do that. Right. And so this is like 2014, 2015. And I'm talking to Jay. I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, it'd be cool to do an app where you can keep track of your pinball scores. And Jay at the time was getting into IoT and was like, yeah, that'd be cool. But wouldn't it be cooler if we made a device that went into the pinball machine that connected it to the internet? So you didn't need to type in your score. It just appeared in the app. And I was like, oh man, well, that's just crazy. And so it took us about 5 or so years of R&D. Pandemic in the middle of it that caused problems, but we launched Scorebit, which is an app to help you keep track of your scores. And there's also like you can find places to play pinball, bars, and things like that. But then we created the product that I named the Scorbitron, which is a little board that goes inside a pinball machine, and it literally connects it to the internet and allows you to feed your scores to the app and have it more, you know, go to the cloud. And it also unlocked a whole bunch of different things like people who own pinball machines and put them on location. So like they're called operators. So when you go to a bar and play a pinball machine, the owner of the bar doesn't own that pinball machine. There's somebody else who brings it in and they split the quarters, like that sort of thing. But now with our device, we have ways to allow that owner to see what's going on with their machine without physically being there. All the perks of actually a modern internet connected device. So we launched Scorebit. It's been going great. a couple of years after we launched, Stern Pinball launched their own platform called Stern Insider Connected, which has a lot of similar.
It's nice to be recognized and copied.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I will bite my tongue on any commentary there. No, honestly, they've done a great job, and it's a lot of fun to use, and it's great. The caveat with their product is that it only works with their ultra modern machines. So Stern has made hundreds of machines over the years. Their platform only works with the latest and greatest, so it only works on like 18 games total. So whereas Scorebit works on over 500 games, Scorebit works on every pinball machine from modern machines all the way back to the 70s, like solid state machines in the 70s.
I have to ask you, Ron, I mean, I think you probably get this all the time. People saying, oh, so like vinyl, it's a nostalgia thing,
yep.
Right? You want to, bring something, maybe back to, people out and about, but with a modern twist.
Yep.
But how do you reconcile with the fact that they have to go somewhere?
Well, I think it's great because it promotes getting out of the house and being social. Right. Like for me, every Wednesday night, I had pinball league and I went and played with 80 other people and I made new friends and it was this whole community. It's that physicality of it. It's one thing to sit on the couch and plug in an Xbox Live or PlayStation, whatever it is, and play with somebody in Australia. That's really cool for a specific thing. But there's something else about going to a bar and like putting in a bunch of quarters and having four people play a four player game and have it all be there and cheer each other on and that sort of thing. It really was like energizing and fun. So like, I see the nostalgia piece because it is a nostalgic thing, happy days with Fonzie and the pinball machine. But the machines that are coming out now they've got full motion video. Now they've got these internet connected, kind of aspect of it to it, which not only allow you to keep track of your scores, but unlocks like achievements and virtual tournaments and Scorebit. We have a way where Sarah, I can play a game here in New York and challenge you and you can play me wherever you are on the same game and see who gets the better score, right? And so it's just a really cool thing to do. I mean, it's a game that yes has a nostalgic aspect, but to me has never lost any of its interest, of its interesting aspect. It's not like we're playing this old timey thing and it doesn't work. Like you look at a game that just came out, like the latest game that just came out from Stern is based on Foo Fighters, right? So it's got all the music of the Foo Fighters. It's got great animation. The guy who designed it, Jack Danger, is a friend of mine, and it's got a great design and it's just a ton of fun to play. And now much like when a new game comes out for PlayStation 5, there's a lot of excitement in the community as who played the new game, who's going to get it, and all that sort of stuff. It's very expensive. It's like 13 grand to get that machine, but people do collect machines. I mean, I have three machines in my garage. Like it's a way to keep practicing, and then I may go into Brooklyn and play a tournament next weekend and meet up with 40 other people who want to play pinball, and it's a social element to it, which I think makes it really special.
Indeed. I'm with you. Well, thanks so much for telling us more about the effort, and thanks for bringing nostalgia into the modern world.
Yeah, and go to scorebit.io. You can see it all on our website. We're in the app is available on iOS and Android, of course. But it's all about having fun. That's the point of it. So,
well, Ron, you're also doing a lot of podcasts and stuff like that. Where can we send people if they loved hearing you? Where can they check out your podcast work as well?
Exactly. So every Tuesday over our friends over at Twit, I do All About Android, which is a podcast dedicated to the world of Android, and that's with Jason Howell and Huynh Dow and Michelle Rahman and J.R. Raphael, and we got a great crew over there doing it. Florence Ion comes on the show. Every Tuesday, about an hour and a half of Android news and reviews and hardware and all that fun stuff. So you can get that. Subscribe to that podcast, please. You can follow me over on Instagram and on Twitter at RonXO. That's my handle. And every now and then I pop up on iFanboy, my old comic book podcast, where I talk about movies and TV shows and stuff like that. You can hear me over there.
That's where I first met you.
Yeah, still going strong.
iFanboy days.
Yep, still going strong. Yeah.
So. Speaking of nostalgia, well, Ron, so glad to have you with us. I know the last time you were on the show was, what'd you say, 8 years ago?
8 years ago. So 2031, yep. I'll be on.
Yeah, we'll see you back then. We got you on the books.
We're not. Let's not make it another 8 years. But really good to have you. And thanks for telling us all about Scorbit and your stuff. But just a reminder, patrons, stick around for our extended show, Good Day Internet. It is Friday in the U.S. Sometimes we do quizzes, but today it's a Proust questionnaire. But just a reminder, you can catch a show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're going to be back Monday. It is WWDC Day, and Mika Montford and Terrence Gaines from the Snob OS podcast will join us then. Have a great weekend. This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people: post-producer and writer Tom Merritt, post-producer and writer Sarah Lane, executive producer and booker Roger Chang, producer, writer, and host Rich Trofolino, video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz, technical producer Anthony Lemos, Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos, science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans, social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterdine, our mods Beatmaster, WScotus1, BioCow, Cap Kipper, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, aka Graduate Virtuoso, and JD Galloway, mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luders, Mustafa A, Acast, and Lynn Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Contributors for this week's shows include Chris Ashley, Scott Johnson, and Justin Robert Young. Guests on this week's show included Ron Richards. And thanks to all the patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.